Welcome to Inside Track with Emil Franzi and friends. Inside Track Productions is solely responsible for its content. Opinions expressed are those of the hosts and their guests and not necessarily endorsed by KVOI or its sponsors.
Hi there! Welcome to Inside Track, Southern Arizona. Sitting in a co-pilot seat, Frank Antonori.
Good afternoon. Hare, how are we doing?
I'm well, Sarge. How about you?
I'm doing good. Hanging out.
And we all know we're going to start off with D-Day, 6th of June.
Yes, sir.
What happened? Gee, I think we took Europe back. You know what?
Well, we started.
You know what we
started
did?
To take Europe back.
And I don't know how that ever worked out because you realize we went in and did regime change.
Yeah, that's right.
And we told the French, we told those fishy French to get the hell out. We got rid of Mussolini. We busted all those people like Quisling and the rest of those cats that were running Norway and all those other countries for Hitler. And then we took out the Germans. And we kind of stuck around and rebuilt the whole place. And I don't know if they resented that or not, do you?
No, I don't think they did. I think, they're doing rather well these days.
And if we'd have just stopped bombing those Germans, they would have quit being Nazis, right? I mean, they wouldn't have gotten along with a regime. What the hell is wrong with these people?
If World War II, and I've seen, and I'm sure you guys have seen the articles that basically said if the war had to be fought today the way it was fought back in the 40s, that we would have lost it. We wouldn't have had the leadership that we had back there. And, you know, for what it's worth, I'm not a big fan of FDR's social policies and whatnot and domestic policy, but he did a fairly good job managing the war. Of course, he's had Eisenhower as his commander of the army and the armed forces. And, of course, Eisenhower became president later. He had great generals all over in every theater that were basically doing a great job on his behalf.
Don't forget the admirals. Yeah. Sorry about that, Army.
I forgot.
Because that Pacific War got won by Nimitz.
That's right. And then you look at, you know, Truman, when Truman came in.
Oh, yeah.
The final decision to end the war completely was to drop a nuclear bomb on two cities in Japan. And if we had to do that today, if the president of the United States, stop and think of this for a moment. Just think of what it would take for the president of the United States today to make that decision.
He couldn't.
There's just no way that you can actually say, I am going to direct the Army Air Corps to fly a B-29. It was a B-29, right?
Yes.
Yeah, B-29 over Nagasaki and Hiroshima, and I'm going to tell them to drop nuclear bombs and annihilate both of those cities.
You know, I think part of the issue is the fact that Roosevelt did not get all that involved, what I have read anyway. He let his generals and admirals prosecute the war, unlike
the micromanagers of today
and yesterday.
And the thing we had over there in Nam, yeah.
So, uh-huh. So I really think that, you know, if you're looking at the enemy that we face today, that is far more, I would say, far more radicalized and insane than the Nazis were. And they were pretty darn insane. And these guys are just downright
The closest off thing the to chart. Is the Japanese militarists who were on a big bonsai charge until the emperor said back off. And he almost didn't make it.
Yeah.
Because they almost kidnapped him. A little story about a 29 raid that took out the electrical power. Otherwise, they might have had him, and we would have had a real problem because that war would have kept rolling along instead of ending when it did, which saved a whole lot of lives
sure.
on both sides.
I think today, the enemy that we face today is again, I think, far more radical and insane than what we faced in the 1940s.
Oh, yeah.
And we are treating this enemy with kid gloves. And I look at what this country expended in treasure and in blood back in 1940 to 1941 through 45, but we actually were somewhat involved before then. The Merchant Marine, I know, was heavily involved with helping our allies out long before we got dragged into the war. But I would say that the will to fight and the amount of money in perspective to how much money was worth at the time and how many American lives gave their lives to protect freedom on this planet from what was Nazi tyranny at the time, I'm just wondering if we have the guts if it came to that today, and it may very well come to that today,
well,
if we have the guts to do it.
But you got to have something other than a weenie in a White House. That's part of the deal.
Well, it's not just the weenie in the White House, too, Emil. It's our Congress. Our Congress is just... They won't do anything. They're all afraid to put their vote down on, you know, and stand up and do the right thing. They should declare war. Declares war.
Right. They need to grow a pair.
They do.
Or a bunch of pairs.
Could put a little bit on the president, and they are putting it on the president because they don't have the guts to stand up there and take it into their own hands.
Right.
You have what really astounds me is you talk about this. We hear this fight over the A-10. And you had the Air Force Chief of Staff and the Secretary of the Air Force. We're in a committee hearing, you know, and you had John McCain up there. And John McCain was beating him up about phasing the A-10 out. And the general said, look, sir, Senator, I don't want to get rid of the A-10. And they don't want to get rid of the Air Force doesn't want to get rid of that airplane. Technically, they have to because they've got other programs that they're trying to fund. They don't have the money because Congress cut their money off. And he told McCain straight up, sir, if you give me $3.2 billion over the next 5 years, I'll keep that airplane. He told him straight up that's what it would take. It's not hard to keep the A-10. You want to save the A-10? You give the Air Force the money that they need to support both the ground crews, the equipment maintenance and support for that aircraft, including the upgrades and the maintenance of the A-10, as well as the Joint Strike Fighter. And he basically said that I don't have any more money for personnel, so the guys that are fixing the A-10, I got to pull them from the A-10 to retrain them to fix the Joint Strike Fighter. If you gave me the money, I can keep both. And it really, that's what it comes down to. It's that simple. But we're underfunding our military. They're at the lowest funding and manning level that they've been since Vietnam.
Yes.
We've lost more aircraft carriers and ships. Our Navy is shrinking to the smallest Navy we've had since the Revolutionary War. People forget that number. And yet we're standing here and we have an enemy banging down gate after gate in the Middle East, taking down our allies and posing a threat. And we're doing the opposite. And here we are on the anniversary of one of the greatest military operations in American and allied history. And the comparison just astounds me.
Ira, what do you think?
Hi, I was going to ask Frank and you as well. Is it practical to keep a plane that's about 35 years old? I'm not saying I'm against them. I think they must be doing a great job, but is it practical?
Well, I'll tell you what. I was the recipient of some very accurate bombing from an aircraft called a B-52 in Afghanistan. And that plane, again, was, as its name implies, came out in the 50s. And it's still flying today. And if you maintain it and you upgrade it, you can keep the plane around. And, you know, there's...
Ira, I was out... I'll give you the F-16's older than the A-10.
Yeah.
I was out to the 162nd, where we're still training fighter pilots for foreign countries on that bird. And that's a pretty effective bird to this day.
Well, there have been newer versions and whatnot. You know,
sure,
they've
come
out.
I mean, these have all been upgraded. The planes pretty well stay the same. It's what's inside them that makes the difference.
And how about the airframe?
Yeah, but to your point, though, here's the problem that the Air Force has. The company that made that airplane's not in business anymore.
Oh, really?
And you see, that's the biggest problem. So Fairchild was the company that built the A-10. And a lot of the drawings, particularly the manufacturing drawings, they can't find them. And nobody really knows what they have. Some of the basic drawings, the schematics and whatnot, but the actual drawings to how to build the plane, they just don't have. So it would be extremely expensive to build new ones of those. And then the Air Force actually said, again, if you follow what's going on in the defense world, that they would consider a replacement aircraft that was similar in capability to the A-10, a close air support, multi-role aircraft. But they don't have the funding for it. And again, it comes down to the funding. It's do you want to pay for it?
I just want to remind you that the 50 caliber machine gun we still mount on just about everything is basically the model 1917 machine gun.
Talking about D-Day,
real good.
My uncle Gino J. Murley was in the Normandy invasion. And he received the Medal of Honor a few months later in Belgium. He used the 50 cal machine gun. My dad was an infantryman in the United States Army during the 1950s. He used the 50 cal machine gun. I was a soldier in Special Forces. I used the living daylights out of the 50 cal machine gun. And to this day, my son is in Korea as a U.S. Army cavalry scout. And guess what he's shooting, Emil? The 50 cal machine gun. And it has not been modified once, with the exception of putting a heavier barrel on it. So the barrel, you could shoot it without having to change barrels more. But the gun itself is still... The M2.
And if we had the button, we'd say John Moses Browning.
And we'd do the
you'd hear the hallelujah from from
that gun has not changed.
How about the airframe? How is that holding up?
Well, you can upgrade the airframe. There's stress points that they can remove certain structures and replace them, certain spars and whatnot. I'm not an aircraft.
I don't know, but I took a hell of a nice ride on a B-17 about 2 years ago.
I know they've replaced. Still in the air. I know they've replaced all the wings.
A lot of P-51s up there that they play bring out.
But
on
the B-52s, they've replaced all the wings on those. Those are all brand new wings on those aircraft.
So who was responsible for that machine gun?
John Moses Browning. There you go. That's Charles Heller. Charles Heller has him as one of the holy saints of gun manufacturing.
By the way, a fast aside on that, then I got to take a break. I have been, when I went to Ogden, Utah, when I was in the Guard up there in the 60s, they had the John Moses Browning Museum at the National Guard Armory up there. And they had every working model and every production model. And I want to tell you something. If you want to fall over in awe, if you know anything about firearms, and you walk in there and you see everything from the 1911 Colt to about three other variations you're familiar with, to all the shotguns, all the 22 caliber rifles, all the lever
everything
action
rifles, he did,
all the machine guns. The guy designed about 50 guns, half of which are still in production.
Oh, man. Okay. Admiral, can I leave you with one thing very quickly? Hello?
Yeah, go.
Yeah, I talked to Ruben Moreno's wife.
Oh.
And she about a week and a half ago.
Yes,
and
sir.
She said he's doing fine. He's a little frail and kind of hard to keep a conversation going. So he didn't call in. But he's hanging in there.
Give him my best when you talk to him. I'm going to give him a call. Thank you, sir.
Do that. Yeah.
All right. We got to grab a break. We'll be back after this.
Soldiers, sailors, and airmen of the Allied Expeditionary Force, you are about to embark upon the Great Crusade, toward which we have striven these many months. The eyes of the world are upon you. The hopes and prayers of liberty-loving people everywhere march with you. In company with our brave allies and brothers in arms on other fronts, you will bring about the destruction of the German war machine, the elimination of Nazi tyranny over the oppressed peoples of Europe, and security for ourselves in a free world. Your task will not be an easy one. Your enemy is well-trained, well-equipped, and battle-hardened. He will fight savagely. But this is the year 1944. Much has happened since the Nazi triumphs of 1940-41. The United Nations have inflicted upon the Germans great defeats in open battle, man-to-man. Our air offensive has seriously reduced their strength in the air and their capacity to wage war on the ground. Our home front have given us an overwhelming superiority in weapons and munitions of war, and placed at our disposal great reserves of trained fighting men. The tide has turned. The free men of the world are marching together to victory. I have full confidence in your courage, devotion to duty, and skill in battle. We will accept nothing less than full victory. Good luck, and let us all beseech the blessing of Almighty God upon this great and noble undertaking.
Inside Track will be right back.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
My fellow Americans, last night when I spoke with you about the fall of Rome, I knew at that moment that troops of the United States and our allies were crossing the channel in another and greater operation. It has come to pass with success thus far. And so, in this poignant hour, I ask you to join with me in prayer. Almighty God, impart our courage unto our sons, wheresoever they may be. And, O Lord, give us faith. Give us faith in Thee, faith in our sons, faith in each other, faith in our united crusade. Let not the keenness of our spirit ever be dulled. Let not the impacts of temporary events, of temporal matters of but fleeting moment, let not these deter us, in our unconquerable purpose. With thy blessing, we shall prevail over the unholy forces of our enemy. Help us to conquer the apostles of greed and racial arrogances. Lead us to the saving of our country, and with our sister nations into a world unity that will spell a sure peace. A peace invulnerable to the schemings of unworthy men, and a peace that will let all men live in freedom, reaping the just rewards of their honest toil. Thy will be done, Almighty God. Amen.
And now back to Inside Track.
Notice neither Ike nor FDR were afraid to use a word called crusade.
Yeah.
We're going to offend.
Or the word God.
Or the word God.
Almighty God.
All this stuff here. You know, you missed a good era there, kid. I'm just going to tell you. Even a liberal leader like FDR still was on the right page on a number of issues that some of his successors seemed to neglect.
And the big thing in that era, whether you're talking FDR or Churchill or any of those guys, they knew that peace came through victory and defeating the enemy and getting unconditional surrender, not capitulating and hoping that if you give in like our current president is with Iran, oh, let's just throw them a bone. Maybe they'll be nice if we throw them a bone. That doesn't work. And they knew it. They knew that the only way to stop that war and to bring peace was to win it. You had to win it.
Got Susie, who's been on the line for a while. So, Susie, my apologies for the long wait.
Oh, that's okay. Emil, this is Susie. I lived in Korea before the Korean War.
Yes, ma'am.
Frank, I really, well, you both can comment. Oh, and I'm older than both of you, so I can't say I remember hearing that speech, but I think I was alive when he was doing it.
Well, that's more than I can say.
Well, no, Susie, I was alive, and I remember D-Day because I remember the little email thingies they used to call them that came in from, not emails, but V-mails that came in from my brother, who was at that time waiting to hit it after D-Day because he went in August with Third Army. Okay.
Well, I was born in 41. Emo, am I older than you? Don't have to tell me.
No, I got you 38.
Oh, see, and I could.
You're just a kid.
He just sounds like a young chicken on the radio.
Oh,
there you go.
It even looks like it. Let's face it, Frank.
Sucks you in.
Frank.
Yeah.
We've never had a president that has canned, I'm going to speak pretty good English. Harry, you might keep your finger on the button. canned that many generals,
that's right.
You know, and all cleaned house like he did.
That's right.
Is there any way now, I know he's commander-in-chief, but is there any way they could rewrite the books to say that if anybody ever pulled that again, they'd have to have a certain percentage of Congress
no.
in on it?
So the president, by the Constitution, is the commander-in-chief of
the
armed forces.
That's what I just said, commander-in-chief.
Well, you would have to amend the Constitution to do that.
The responsibility is ours because we elected the schmuck twice.
That's right.
Well, I get that. But and I don't think anybody else will, hopefully, that we've never put anybody in like that again.
So we've gone through this before. All right. So Jimmy Carter, after Vietnam, basically
Did he can this many?
Oh, well, not this many.
No.
But what they do is they take the top off, right? They take all the generals out and they replace them with all their little yes men that want to do whatever. You know, we got a guy named Ronald Reagan who came in and he said, no, we're going to go in the other direction. There are, and I can guarantee you because I know many of them, up and coming very, let's just say because of over 12 years of combat, warrior officers in the United States military, many of which I've served with that are now, colonels and 1- and 2-star generals, that I believe that if we get rid of the current guy in the White House, which, thank you, term limits, we will, and we replace him with somebody that's more akin to the Reagan mindset that, you know, deterrence through a strong military is the way to go, I can see a lot of those younger officers being moved up faster to refill to refill those and get rid of those yes men that have been doing what they've been doing the last couple of years. I think that's definitely doable.
So
I think we can rescue it too, and I also think we can rescue our police departments from what's going on to them, happening to many of
sure.
them right now. I mean, look at what's going down in Baltimore. That is the sickest thing I've ever seen. And I did write one column on it, and I think my line was absolutely correct. It was the new version of Sergeant Schultz.
Yeah, I see nothing, hear nothing, do nothing.
Wait a minute. Where I'm not responsible. I was only giving the orders. Now, think about it. You've got these people who have been running a town for 40 years, and they're blaming their employees for not doing whatever that they were in charge of giving the orders on, and they're in hiring the boss. What's going on here? So the problem in this country goes deeper than just what we've done in our military. We've done it in a bunch of other places, too.
But the reason is, though, Emil, we've destroyed our education system in this country. And when I was a kid in school, we learned all about World War II. We learned about Churchill and FDR and what the country went through and what the Greatest Generation went through to preserve that war. My sons, when they were going through school, I would ask them, and they got one little blurb on World War II, the short little, you know, maybe a couple weeks in class on what went down in World War II. And we're not teaching the history and the civics that we used to teach. So the kids don't know.
Hey, you know what?
They don't know what this country went through. They don't know the blood. They don't know the hardship that people endured. So when this guy comes along and he starts talking about free phones and gas in everybody's tank and free healthcare and everything else, they forget where all that came from and what the sacrifices were, and they just vote for the guy. And they don't know what they're giving away. They don't know the freedom that they're losing when they surrender it to these guys.
What amazes me is the glass is still half full, because I can tell you a bunch of other people and a bunch of kids I know, including this one sitting next to us, Mr. Eagle Scout, our intern, that there are some people in this age category. My granddaughter being another one, she's here right now, and two of her friends came with her, but one of them we started talking to, the other gal, and I could tell by the fact that she knew who Greta was as soon as we turned on Fox News that her parents are taking care of it, okay?
That's good.
So, no, they're not all screwed up, folks. All right, Susie, thanks. I got to take a fast call from Man in Black and move on to the next guest. Appreciate the call, ma'am. Man in Black.
Yeah, well, I just wanted to say that, you know, besides giving up the A-10 for budgetary reasons, what they're really saying is we're giving up the mission. I did a simulation of the procurement process of getting the A-10. I mean, we pretended to be generals, and we were doing a whole routine in the military school and training, and we evaluated everything that we needed and what did the job the best. And, I mean, I have to say, we came up with the A-10. I mean, we weren't trying to, or we weren't forced to it or whatever, but, I mean, the criteria of the mission determined that that's what you wanted. Now, if you want to do it a different way, I think Frank's mentioned some of that before. Like, if we have a drone that could do the mission, they could replace it with that. If you had, you know, some exotic weaponry that could do the mission, you could replace it with that, too. But you are giving up that mission of having a powerful gun, powerful precision-guided bombs flying over you when you call for it, and you're going to give that up.
Hey, Mark, maybe they could contract with ATS and Redflex and put up red light cameras out there.
Yeah,
huh?
Put up red light cameras with laser cannons.
No, I agree. I agree with your assessment, and I honestly believe you're 100% right that the Air Force does not want that, what they consider a dirty role of close air support for the Army.
Right.
And I can tell you the Army is jealous of the Marine Corps because they have basically their own Air Force, and the Army is doing what they can right now to reconstitute the Army Air Corps to provide.
Well, the Army got to keep the helicopters.
Well, yeah, the Key West Agreement set that up, but I'm saying what really is happening now is the Army's buying a lot of aircraft, and they're weaponizing it, and they're arming them, and they're developing these new ways to provide close air support
and
for their guys
bit of luck,
without the Air Force.
They'll have more planes than the Air Force.
Right, and you could do that, but that's, you know, that's up in that big.
Yeah.
Big decision plan in the sky with all of
the Army would buy the A-10 tomorrow. I honestly believe that the Army would buy that airplane tomorrow if it wasn't for the Key West Agreement. I really do.
Well, then you make maybe some amendments to the Key West Agreement.
And so the Air Force would fight that tooth and nail, man. They don't want the Army with jet aircraft. I mean, that's
right. So does the Army need
need V-22s with a 30-millimeter cannon on them? Is that their answer?
No. They're buying tons of Gray Eagles. It's the modified MQ-1 Predator.
And they're putting
missiles on them. But they're arming the new Apache helicopters with some really sophisticated stuff, and it's basically their version of the A-10. But the Key West agreement, where the Army agreed that they would take all rotary wing and prop-driven aircraft and only use it for intra-theater transport and all the stuff, and the Air Force was going to do all jet and do the extra-theater transport. That's changed so dramatically since that agreement was written that maybe it is time to have somebody in Congress.
It's time to have a president who understood it and he could issue the appropriate executive orders that are within his sphere of influence.
But Congress needs to maybe take a look at it and say, you know what, maybe we need to let the Army do what the Marine Corps is doing and give them their own organic close air support.
A president with an agenda. We used to have those.
Yeah, that's right.
That's what D-Day is all about. All right, we're going to grab a break. We'll be back. Thank you, sir. We'll be back in a bit.
Inside Track will be right back. And now back to Inside Track.
From probably one of the great war movies of all time and a great World War II movie.
Spielberg did a heck of a job on that movie.
Yeah, he did. That's the most realistic combat scene. And I'm talking about D-Day for June.
Like I said, my Uncle Gino, who was on the second wave at D-Day, when he saw that movie, he told me straight up that it was pretty damn close.
Yeah.
Pretty damn close. Nothing can be as exact as it was, but he told me.
Well, no, because you can't get the smell. But what you can get is if you're in the right theater, was with a surround sound. You really got the sound of.
Yeah,
of
he
what
was.
It, must have been
it
like.
Shook him up, so I knew this must have been pretty good. So yeah,
superb flick. All right, Ed, Roxy, how are you?
Yes, hello.
Welcome. I'll tell you why Ed's up, because Ed has a product and he doesn't advertise. So, and this is not. Not because he's an advertiser or anything else. It's actually because he's a buddy of Duncan Hunter, and that's how I found him. or how he found me. And anybody that hangs with Duncan Hunter can't be all bad. It has to be pretty good, actually. I'm not going to tell any Duncan stories because I want to get to Ed and the kelp water and exactly what it is and how it works. And I got to tell you, you sent me a sample. And it has to have healing properties for wounds and burns and stuff, and we'll talk about that a little bit more. But I tell you what I did to test it. I am always out in the desert screwing around with cactus and stuff, and I got old, thin skin, and I get a lot of little cuts. And I get them in basically the lower arms because sometimes I remember to put on a long-sleeve shirt, but usually I don't. So what I end up with was all these little scabs all over me. So what I decided I was going to try was I was going to use your product, Ed, on one arm and not on the other. And I watched what healed quicker. And it was about a 50% healing improvement on the arm I was using that kelp water on. That's all I got to say.
Oh, so you rub it on.
Yeah.
You don't drink it.
I thought it was something you drink. No, you squirt it on. It's an exterior.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
it's
okay.
An exterior a product. Tell us what it is and how you got into it, Ed. How did you discover this stuff?
I had a granddaughter that was 5 years old, and she got eczema, and they gave her cortisone shots and cortisone cream, and that wasn't helping her. She was crying and itching all the time, and the sores would go in every joint in her arms and her fingers and her neck and her ears and her eyes. I said, oh, my gosh, I gotta try to help her. What can I do? And I remember I used to dive a lot. There's a place in the ocean that when I would go through it, I would get, like, rejuvenated. And I went, what is this? It was kind of like when you take a walk in the mountains, you feel different. and its connection with nature. And by the way, I'm a naturalist, so I'm all into nature. So I went back there after 40 years, mind you, back to that spot, and I gathered up the kelp. I brought it home. I processed it. I put it in a little spray bottle like I gave you.
Yep.
And I took it to my granddaughter. I said, here, spray this on you. And she says, Bobby, is it going to hurt? And I said, it'll only sting for just a little bit, but I'm hoping it'll work for you. So she starts spraying it on. And within minutes, the itching went away. The next day, the sores weren't hurting anymore. Hmm. 3 days later, she had no sores, no redness. And to this day, she is now 12 years old. She has the bottle in her medicine cabinet, and it does pop back up in one little spot, and she'll go squirt it, and it goes right away.
Hmm. I don't know what else to tell you. Now, you've got a website, so write down carefully, folks, if you're interested. That website, well, go ahead and spell it out.
Yeah, skinfix.us.
So skin fix, is that it?
Skinfix.us.
Skinfix.us.
Dot us. Yes. That's easy.
And let me give you my, you can also have my phone number, my personal phone number, because I get a lot of calls on some people that are apprehensive to spray at other places. And it's for the body. You can spray it anywhere on your body.
Yeah, by the way, I can't find any ill effects that come from spraying this stuff
it's
on them. It's water, it looks like.
It's like sea cabbage, right? Isn't that what kelp is? It's like a...
Yes, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
And that's found in our foods, toothpaste, shampoo, salad dressing, pharmaceuticals. And
they wrap sushi in it. That's what the sushi comes with, right? Kelp?
Yes, and by the way, the Oriental people make a kelp soup, and I know a doctor that is 112 years old, and her daughter left the Philippines because she got tired of kelp soup, and she lives in the United States of America. The daughter does, and the mother's still alive.
Well, I don't know. All I can tell you is I gave it my own test. I did that out of courtesy to a great American you and I are both close to, and that's Duncan. And if he said try this, I'd try just about, for Duncan, I'd try just about anything because I believe in him. And I tried this stuff, but I did my own test, one arm versus the other arm, real simple. At the end of about 3 days, one of them was the scabs had gone, and the other one they were still there. And I don't know, yeah. I don't know why it works, but it works. And I recommend you get yourself a sample bottle of it and you try it if you have any kind of a skin problem whatsoever. For one thing, what else is it good for?
I have testimonials from men and women. Okay, there's a radio station in Florida that the guy used it for his sore throat and shingles. Another guy used it for shingles. Another one for laryngitis. I had another guy call me from Florida that said he has this rash on his chest that he's had for 4 years. And the doctors can't clean it up. He tried it. It cleared up his chest. No more redness on his chest.
Hmm.
Excuse me.
So
70-year-old Floyd sunburned on the golf course on his head because he didn't wear his hat.
So do you know what the process is? Is it a chemical in the kelp? Is it some kind of a combination of things? What's the magic in that? There's got to be some kind of...
Well, let's just take a look at it. It has vitamin A, vitamin B, vitamin C, D, E, and K.
That's all in kelp?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
And trace minerals and proteins.
Wow. Oh, yeah.
It's just a super food. I mean, it's just wonderful. I got a doctor.
How come we're not? Wait, there's millions of... I mean, when I went out with the family on vacation out to San Diego, there's kelp everywhere out there. You know?
But that's not the same where I get it.
Oh, you get special kelp.
Because I'm a diver. I'm now 75. I don't do it that much anymore. But it was a special place I came across, and I remembered it. There's a Dr. Behek that he treats his diabetic sores with it, and it works wonderful. I have another guy that he called me up because all my cards he has my personal phone number. And he was really upset. He says, I'm going to lose my left leg if I don't get these sores under control. And they were about the size of a silver dollar, two of them. And they were oozing all the time. No matter how much he band-aid, wrapped it, and put gauze on it, it leaked. The doctors for 4.5 years could not fix it. He asked me if I thought my Roxy Pacifics would do it. And I said, I believe so. So I ran him a bottle, mind you, to his house. He put Roxy Pacifics on and was a month. The sores were, I like 3 weeks, actually. The sores were shrink down to the size of a pinhead. And after a month, no more sores.
I have one more testimony just to talk about natural stuff, okay? 95, I snapped my ankle in an accident over a compound fracture over in California. I had a great big incision. It was probably about 2 inches long when they went in and put a bunch of screws in and did everything else, and it wouldn't heal. And after a couple of months, they said, you're going to need plastic surgery. We're going to take some skin off your butt and put it on your ankle, yada, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. And my wife says, hey, why don't you try this? And she gave me Australian tea tree oil. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I had an appointment coming up in 30 days. I put it on this incision that would not shrink. And within 30 days, half of the incision had shrank. And the doc looked at and said, hey, I don't think we're going to need to do that surgery after all. And I said, he said, what are you doing? And I said, Australian tea tree oil. And here's the scary part, Ed. The guy says to me, yeah, we'd heard about that, and we've got a lot of people tell us it works, but we can't tell you that.
That's exactly what I'm getting with my product. They will not endorse it.
Because they're going to get burned if they do, because the FDA is going to be all over them because the government didn't put their samples.
But they can't do FDA because it's a food product.
Right.
Yeah.
So you just have to be quiet, but you can't claim it. But right. If you're a medical doctor, you get screwed if you tell people about these things. So at any rate, that cured. Well, I didn't have to have surgery on that thing. It healed up.
Yeah, well, I'm going to tell you something.
And your water might have worked if I'd have had it then. But the point, I'm...
Oh, it would have. Believe me, I'm about ready to tell you something. For all the men, all the women out there that do facelifts and some men, I am a testimonial. That was my wife. My wife had her family is hereditary with this, what I call is a chicken neck. And she says, honey, would you mind if I had this removed? And I said, no. So long story short, she had it removed. But not only that, while she was there, she had a complete facelift. Now, you go home, you got these balls hanging on the side of your head, scare your husband to death, and your wife starts recuperating. So I gave her a big long list of pharmaceuticals to get to put on all of her scars and stuff. So I said to her, do you mind if we do our own test? We don't buy all these drugs. We just use Roxy Pacifics. And she said, no. She used it. Now her 2-month appointment to go back, she had to go back, and the doctor checks her out. The nurse put her up on the table. She's looking at her. She's trying to find the scars. She couldn't find them. Said to my wife, just a minute. I got to go get the doctor. I cannot find the scars. She went and got the doctor. I'm not kidding. He knows where they're at. He had to look and look and look. He says, oh, my gosh, look. Look, see this little spot right here where I ended? You see that right there? I tucked some skin under there. I shouldn't have done that. So if you want me to remove it, I can. My wife said, no, thank you. No scarring whatsoever.
Ed, I'm going to close this by just saying one thing. A bunch of this, if we watch these ads on TV for pharmaceuticals, it's 10 seconds worth of here's what it can do for you.
And then 20 minutes of the bad stuff.
All the bad stuff that could kill you. I got to say, there's absolutely nothing that kelp water is going to do to hurt you. I mean, that's the interesting thing about it. So I would recommend that people go to skinfix.us, look it up, and give Ed a call or try a bottle of it if you have any kind of skin problems, because I got to just say one thing. It's working for me. Okay.
Thank you. Can I say one more thing?
Sure, go for it.
If you've got pets, please use this on your pets. If you have to do surgery on your pets, use skinfix.us because it takes those scars away, and if they have mange, spray it on them, it'll go away, and all their hair will grow back.
Good thought. Thank you. I hadn't thought about that. My dogs look pretty good, but I got one that's got a, gets an itch every once in a while, and I'm going to remember that the next time he scratches too hard.
Yes, and don't forget ear infection. My cat had an ear infection. The doctor couldn't clear up for a while, and I gave up on his medicine, which was an oil, and I sprayed ours, and then 3 weeks later, my cat's running down the hallway doing backflips just about.
All right. Ed Roxy, thank you so very much. If you see Duncan before I do, give him my best.
Okay, area code 619-654-4829, and I sure will.
Thank you, sir.
Take care.
Take care, Ed.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
Inside Track will be right back.
We are coming on 23 minutes. That may be good enough for the rest of the 506. That is not good enough for Easy Company.
And now back to Inside Track.
And one hell of a great television series, Band of Brothers.
I watched it several times, actually, already. I watch it on Netflix. So I just love the show.
That's just real stuff.
Yeah.
And some of those guys were around for that, and some of them had died off since they made the series. But sure. The series was pretty good. 790-2040. We got about 7 minutes left. There's one thing I did want to kick.
That's where kids these days get their history from. You can't get it in school, so you got to watch these wonderful documentaries.
Well, fortunately, we got some out there that are worth watching.
Yeah,
and I learned this on doing the Wyatt Earp stuff. Whenever you're talking to a bunch of people, I learned this from my good friend Scott Dyke down in Green Valley, because he gives a lot of lectures on Old West stuff. He says the audience you're talking to will know what the movies told them from Hollywood for the last 30 years.
Yep.
So if you want to talk about Custer, guess where I, and then you have to take them from where they're at to explain to them what really went down. But in the case of Band of Brothers or Private Ryan, they're pretty much on the money. Okay, what did I want to get to here? I want to get to this one on youth unemployment, just for kicks, because I've got a youth who's employed. You got a job?
Yes, sir. Luckily.
How hard was it?
To get the job?
Yeah.
Well, to find a job, that took forever. I applied to countless places. And then finally, a friend of mine got me referred to this job, which is all the way up in Saddlebrook.
Networking.
Yeah.
It's what it takes.
At this point, it's the only thing.
Yeah, you got to have a network in order to find jobs.
We got two numbers here, and I'm glad to see this outfit does it this way. Generation Opportunity National Nonpartisan Youth Advocacy Organization. The effective U6 unemployment rate for 18 and 29 years, which adjusts for labor force participation by including those who have given up looking for work, you know, a little something to get a look at, 13.6%. The unemployment rate, the official one, 9.1%.
Yeah.
So the difference is about 4 points, just like the real unemployment rate in this country is probably over 10.
So there's another thing that came out from the Bureau of Labor and Statistics yesterday. Of course, Wall Street doesn't like that, and we've seen the market drop over the past couple of days. And that is that the number of Americans that are working and not being counted in either the unemployment or the participation numbers are actually underpaid because they're working part-time. And the number of part-time workers, if you add in and you go back and look prior to 2008, the number of people that had full-time jobs, and you compare it to today, it's an astounding number, because there are a lot of people that had full-time jobs 10 years ago, 8 years ago, that are only able to find part-time work now. And what all these statistics miss is the true economic picture, because anybody can cherry-pick a statistic. But if you actually go to see what percentage of Americans have full-time work, that number is almost 50%. Only half of the country has a full-time job. The other half either has a part-time job, which is about another 20% of Americans, and then the remaining 30% doesn't. We are – well, actually, it's more than 30%. It's 34% of 18 to 65-year-old Americans that could work are not working. They're either unemployed or they've given up and they're not working. So we have the labor participation rate is down to 64% in this country.
There's something else going on.
And only 50% of that is full-time work. Everybody else is working a part-time job.
Do you think every guy who's on unemployment or was on unemployment or is off getting welfare or is fake Social Security disability, which is easy to do, and all the other things, they're not all staying at home watching TV. They're working for cash around the corner.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Okay, a lot of them are because most people would prefer doing that. But we got a system that keeps grinding everything to the point where they can't. I just read one where if you take the New York minimum wage up to $15 an hour, one out of every five franchise restaurants is going to close.
Have you guys been following? Have you been following what's going on in Los Angeles? I'm laughing my rear end off.
Oh yeah, because
okay, so Los Angeles does this $15 an hour thing where it's over a 3-year period. It goes
phases in.
Yeah, so it goes to $10, $12, right. $15. So first of all, the fast food restaurants are reducing, as Emil said, either they reduce their workforce or they go out of business, and they're starting to do the kiosk.
And by the way, a lot of those robots are minority people
right.
who bought a franchise
right.
in the poor part of town because that's all their people can afford to eat.
And so, just like Nate said, they're being replaced with robots.
Right. Well, it's even better than that, Harry.
The Terminator.
This is bad. So 2 days ago, I was watching. I watch MSNBC. Because Sun Tzu, Art of War, know thy enemy as you know thyself.
See, exactly.
So I was watching MSNBC the other night, and I couldn't stop laughing. And they were talking about this tragedy, this poor guy. But I'm there laughing the whole time because this guy is blaming, this was funny, the Republicans for the problem that he was encountering. And the problem was this. When he was making less than $10 an hour or $11 or whatever it was, he was eligible for food stamps and Medicaid. Then his salary went up. He was from Seattle because they did this up in Washington.
Right.
Then his salary went up to $15 an hour, and his food stamp check stopped coming.
Uh-oh.
And his Medicaid check stopped coming, and
uh-oh.
He had to go. And he was on MSNBC whining that because he's making more money now, that the benefits that he was used to, he was a single father. He had a daughter. Of course, they had it was all about trying to get the sympathetic reaction, but I'm sorry, I don't get that doesn't happen to me. But anyways, I'm saying, oh, isn't that too bad? You're starting to make more money, and oh, now you don't get all the freebies that you were getting. So he was all upset that his welfare got reduced because he was now making too much money. I couldn't get over it. It was the funniest thing I ever saw, the old unintended consequences.
Oh, yeah, and we got a pot full of that going around with the number of businesses that are just not going to be there anymore.
Yeah, so he claimed that because of a welfare reform that was passed, by the way, and signed by Bill Clinton, it wasn't the Republicans, although they keep trying to say it was the Republicans. Bill Clinton signed the law that basically set the thresholds for the level of support that you get. And he was upset because once he crossed that little threshold and he was now making over $30,000 a year, that he didn't get any more free stuff. And he was all bummed out and upset about it.
I remember trying
He'd rather lose the money and go back to what he was so he can keep his free stuff.
I don't have time.
The poverty trap,
yeah.
as
yeah.
I learned in economics, fortunately.
Yeah.
Did you really?
Yeah, they actually talked about it.
Where did they teach you that?
Where did they teach me?
Yeah.
At Pima? When I took the economics class.
Oh,
they
wow.
Actually
at the community college?
Yeah, they actually talked about the poverty trap
it's,
and its
wow.
problem.
How about that?
So good deal, Nate
good
there.
Good deal, Nate. Thanks for the report. All right, gang, hang in. We'll be back after the news.
Inside Track will be right back.